Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service, real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of our running back draft countdown for the 2025 class. Joining me for that, again, is Gabe Ferguson. Gabe, how you doing?
I'm good, Ken. Looking forward to going through these top five running backs. I think we are probably looking at some similar players here. We've narrowed it down, I think.
Yeah, I would agree. I think this episode probably is not as long, and judging by the top five names, I'd be really surprised if we had if it's not the same five names, probably in some different order, would be my guess. But let's review what we talked about the first time. We'll save honorable mentions for last, and then that'll leave us with some interesting discussion for then. But your number 10 guy off the top was RJ Harvey of Central Florida, right?
Right. Yep.
And then I had Damian Martinez of Miami, who I think you had a little higher. You had him at number 7.
I had him at 9. Okay. Yep.
And then, so you had Martinez at 9. I had Devin Neal at number 9. He was on your list.
He was my 7.
Number 7. Okay. Yep. So a little bit back and forth going there. And then at number 8 and number 6, we each had an alternation. At you had Quinshon Judkins of Ohio State at number 8, and I had Cam Scadaboo, and we had just the opposite at number 6.
Correct.
All right. And my number 7 guy, who I think was left off your list, was DJ Giddens, right?
Yeah, that's right. He was my first honorable mention. Missed the cut for me.
K-State back and a guy who might be kind of exciting. So I think that takes us all the way down to number 6. Those are all the players we've discussed so far. And I think there's a pretty good chance we're talking about the same players. But before we get into this, and I think the remaining players, I think, will all be first 3-round guys. Okay, would you agree with that? The remaining players on your list all drafted in the first 3 rounds?
I would definitely expect that, yep.
Yeah, I would expect it too. I only really see one first-round back of this group, but it could even be a second first-round back potentially, but probably only one. But all these guys, you know, 2-2-3-3 are my next round expectations or hopes, I guess, if the Ravens were to get these guys. But are you, do you think the place a likely, maybe handicap it for me, the probability of the Ravens drafting a back in the second round? Well, okay, let's do 1, 2, 3, and 4 plus for their first running back drafted. And we'll both come up with this, and then we'll do it. And I'm just going to round near percent or near 5% on these, I think. All right. Okay, I've got mine.
Okay. I've got mine too.
Okay, so first round, what's the probability the Ravens' first running back drafted is in the first round?
I have 5%.
Okay, I have 0. I don't think.
Yeah.
Okay. I think rounded near 5%. I probably got to put it at 0. Second round.
I have 10%.
10% also. So we're in agreement there. The third round.
I'm going to go a little bit higher. I'm at 25% in the third round.
Okay, I'm at 20. So my total is 30% for a draft pick in the first three rounds. And you're at 40% then? Is that right? 25 plus 10 plus 5?
Yeah, I guess if you're doing it additively, yeah.
Okay. And then the fourth round or higher for their first running back, then you would have 60% and I have 70%, right?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's assuming a running back is taken at all, right?
Yeah, you're right. Fourth round or later could mean undrafted, I suppose. You know, no running back at all has got to be considered there. It's a possibility. So, okay. Well, some interesting players. There's probably a pretty long list of honorable mention players we'll talk about at the end of the show, but we don't want to spoil who the honorable mentions are. We'd rather just go into the top five directly. Who is your number five guy?
My number five is Dylan Sampson. I think a really interesting back, maybe to me the most interesting back in this class. Played at Tennessee, a little bit of a gimmicky offense. I think is maybe my biggest concern about him is he played against a lot of light boxes. But I think he showed some of the most impressive pure running back traits of anybody in this class. Just in terms of his vision, his ability to kind of like pace his speed, his the way he kind of approaches the line of scrimmage, setting up his blocks, his balance. I think he's really talented around the line of scrimmage, kind of the short area, change of direction, stop on a dime. He reminds me of LeSean McCoy in a lot of ways. A very productive running back. He has a lot of the kind of shiftiness there. He has long speed too. I think he is probably in the 4.4s. I think he ran in his pro day.
4.42. Yep.
So he has like a really good combination of skills. The one kind of detriment, I guess, is his size. He's on the smaller side. He's was it 5'8", 200 about, or 5'11", 200. Sorry. He's a little bit taller. So he's not as dense as you might like, at a running back. But in terms of, you know, a lot of the traits that I personally was looking at, he did very well. I mean, he isn't the highest in terms of like forcing missed tackles. The yards after contact is kind of mid pack, not the best. But he is able to kind of like hit those long runs, which is nice to see. And then I think he does really well in condensed spaces, which is not something that can be said for all the running backs in this class.
All right. Oh, very good comments. And I actually had, I can see where I got the note right. I tried to get all my measurements down from NFL Draft Buzz because they're generally very accurate and they tell you the source of various things, which is good. You really need to know if he ran a 4.42 at his pro day or at the combine where you can really trust the measurement. He's a 4.42 at his pro day, which is a little bit more suspicious, but they also had him as 5.8 on his main profile and 5.11 on one of the other pages. So 5.11 appears to be correct. One of the problems with Dylan Sampson, he's got very small hands. Big plus that he won't be 21 until September 14th. So he's one of the younger backs in the entire class, or is maybe one or two younger among the draftable guys. Only 462 college touches. That's fairly light, but 278 of that came in 2024, which speaks to an ability to be a one contract workhorse back at a minimum. And I think you made some very good comments in that first show about running backs. You don't really worry too much about the second contract. You worry about how much can they give you on the first contract. And a guy who has a fair amount of tread wear in college might still be an indication that he can be a workhorse for you. And so I think that's Samson. I think that's a good, you know, it would be a good bet. I think he'll get you through to the end of the first contract with some very solid play. And I think he'll be a contributor right away. He's actually my number two back on my list. So I liked him more. He had 5.9 yards per carry and 22 touchdowns this last year, 1,491 rushing yards. That all led the SEC. That is, you know, big time turf, of course. And he had five games of 25 plus carries. So right there, that's kind of the definition of a workhorse. He was the SEC Offensive Player of the Year. He was not, however, the consensus All-American, which is a little surprising, but it is what it is. Excuse me. His after contact numbers were pretty mediocre. 0.27 MTF and 3.60 YACO, so yards after contact per attempt. Not outstanding. It's not what you would expect out of a powerful and shifty back like he is. His fumbles are a concern. He had four of those in 2024. And I'd say it's more of a concern given that hand size I mentioned. And you know, if we think back to some other players who've had hand size issues, Alex Smith and Tony Banks at quarterback, for example, are guys who had issues with fumbling and hand size, you know, contributed to it. You know, it's not something you want in a running back. It's you don't want him carrying the football with chopsticks, as I say. He has a unimpressive career as a receiver with 5.7 yards per target on negative 0.4 ADOT. He has relatively few total catches that are not behind the line of scrimmage. So sometimes you get, you know, at least you get a mix of the two, but you get an A dot that's very close to zero overall. If you look at his A dots by game, it's -3, -2.7, -3, 7.0, -2.5, -4, 2, -4, -0.5. You know, it's a lot of negative numbers by game, which means whatever receiving opportunities he's getting behind the line of scrimmage. I could find reasons for that. I didn't really try and study those plays individually to see if it's Tennessee's asking him to chip block and he's having some of the same problems that Justice Hill had in terms of finding space and relativizing himself to the defenders to take the biggest advantage after the catch. So that would be a question. Now, one of the things that elevated Samson for me a lot was that despite his size, he might be the best pass blocker in the entire draft among the top running backs. And Tennessee used him to set block a lot. And I have those numbers for you just for a second. Make sure I go to that. And then, so PFF, they don't give you a blocking credit. So they don't consider it a pass blocking snap if it's not a set block. So if you hear my offense shows, you'll hear a division of set and chip blocks by player or for the team as a whole. And I think chip, you know, not asking a player to chip block is important, but they had Samson set block 133 times on the season. And he's one of the only backs in this entire class that did fairly well at the job. So lots of experience with it, and he's good at it, makes him a valuable block, a valuable player to have on the field on any play that you want to pass or run, that you might pass or run. So value there is good. Doesn't have to be a specific third down back because there are more explosive receivers as third down blacks and backs, and Justice Hill might be such a player. But Dylan Sampson's pass blocking elevated on my list to number two.
I'm not surprised that you have him at number two. I thought I might be a little bit low on him at five overall. A few other interesting stats that I didn't mention the first time around. He was extremely good in conversions. There was a stat I pulled in 2024. He had 36 carries with two or fewer yards to go and converted 33 of them. And mm-hmm. That's, I think, really impressive for a player of his size. He's not like a 220 pound, like kind of sledgehammer. But it shows, I think, his vision. It shows his kind of his footwork, his ability to work in those condensed spaces, as I mentioned earlier. Just a very good all-around player. I think he, you know, he has that home run potential. I think, you know, the hand size, like you mentioned, is probably one of the contributors to the fumbling, which is a concern. I'm going to be interested to see where he goes in the draft. He's one of the players that I had in mind when we mentioned the third down or third round consideration, because I think he might potentially slip to that point.
Here's my question for you. What is the pick number, including any possibility trading up, trading back, whatever it is? What is the pick number that you'd be good with the value on Dylan Sampson being drafted?
So I would probably want to be in the top half of the third round. So probably around pick 75.
Okay. I think I'm okay. And Ravens pick at 59, I believe. I have to check that again. It's something you definitely need to know going into the draft, but I think it's 27 and 59 they pick. Yeah, 59. I think I'd be okay if the Ravens drafted him 59.
Wow.
It would be a commitment to the future of the running back position. It wouldn't be a fantastic value pick, but it would be okay value. And I trust the Ravens' judgment on what they're getting out of it. It would be getting younger at the position, which is, I think, actually kind of important. And he's one of the only guys that I think they might get at that spot. And I think I could see his value at that spot. There's a bunch of other players I'd say, it's too high. But he's one I would be okay with.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't hate it. I'll say that. Like, I think the value there is he's more of like late second, early third. I would prefer early third if possible. Mm-hmm. But you know, if there's a kind of a trade back consideration there, definitely would be something I'd be interested in. If you have a couple running backs you like, or a couple players you like, doesn't have to be running back, but if he's one of the people or players that could be drafted in that range, I would love that.
Okay. All right. I guess it's my turn to go to my number five guy, right? So let's get to him. That's Caleb Johnson of Iowa. I know a lot of people love him even more than I do. I mean, I like him, obviously. 6'1", 224, 33-inch arms, 457. Definitely a prototypical power back. Has 537 college touches, average career workload for a draftable back. But he does have a 240 carry season he's coming off of in 24. Just the same kind of things we talked about with Sampson in terms of a guy who could carry the rock for you quite a bit. 6.4 yards per carry, 23 touchdowns. That's two receiving, 21 rushing. Were big jumps in his career high, and it led to a consensus All-American designation. Played in an absolutely terrible Iowa offense. I mean, Iowa's just they couldn't move the football a whole bunch of times. He had a big run in one game, the 72-yard screen catch against Nebraska. He had five missed tackles forced. And that game, Iowa, I believe, only got five first downs the whole game. Might have been six, but it was a really low total. And it's like, how do you manage to only get five or six first downs when you have Caleb Johnson in your backfield, you know, running the football? Good combination of patience and burst in his game. That really makes up for that lack of elite speed. But whenever he goes down the field, he doesn't really run away from defenders. Oftentimes, particularly the 72-yard screen catch was extraordinarily well blocked. It was kind of play that, even though he had some missed tackles forced on that play. I'm actually confusing that with a run of Damian Martinez. So I'm not good. I'm talking out of the wrong end with that one. But he, good player in terms of creating value for you in level two with missed tackles. 6.9 yards per target as a receiver, 7.60 in his final season in Iowa. Nothing to write home about in either way. Never anything but a screen pass in his case. Not only was his A-dot -3.0 for the season, it was never positive for any game. So he's kind of a one-trick pony in terms of what you do. It's going to be fun to see the first time he runs a wheel route and tries to get behind a linebacker in the NFL. And then wait a minute, you're not allowed to do that. But he was very effective on the, or somewhat effective on the pass. He did a lot of it coming on that 72-yard screen catch. His pass blocking is somewhat of a disappointment for his size. Hope that can be improved in the NFL, but at 6'1", 224, he better be one of the better pass blockers in the league if he's going to be on the field. And like, you're going to hear this with many of the backs in this class, is just that they're really big disappointment for their size. And it's, I think it's a general malaise of college football running backs that that's going across. The Ravens would probably either have to do one of two things to get him, either reach for him in round two, where he's one of several, or have him be one of several options that could fall to them at number 91. So we can discuss that, but I want to hear your thoughts on him first. I'm guessing you probably had him higher.
I did. I had him a little higher. He was my number three running back. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you covered pretty much all of the metrics really well. There isn't too much more to add. He was predominantly used in zone schemes in college in the Iowa offense. So that's an interesting thing to see, you know, how he would translate. He's like you mentioned, kind of like the one cut type player. And I think, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean he wouldn't be able to contribute to the Ravens, who use a much more varied approach. I mean, they do some, you know, zone running, and I think he would probably be very successful in that. I think he is extremely good in the sense of being able to, you know, make a man miss. That's one of his best kind of features, I think, as a runner. And then he has that home run potential too. Even though he didn't test, like, he has a high top end speed. I think he was in the 4.55 range or 4.57, I think. Mm-hmm. I think when you look, watch him play, he is at least level or running away from defensive backs fairly regularly. I think he has better game speed than when he tested that. So I think he would be, you know, a very good piece to pretty much any NFL offense, assuming he has the ability to kind of pick up in like a more gap friendly, more gap oriented scheme. That's something that you would have to look into. But the ability to kind of like convert or turn out longer runs especially after making a man or two miss, I think could be really dynamic in a backfield with Lamar Jackson. So a lot of potential there. Definitely some concerns on third down. I think that's where he really kind of like diminishes as a prospect a little bit. But in terms of pure running ability, he's to me like that. And that's why I have him as a top three. I think he just showcases there.
So his Yakko per attempt was 4.42 this last year, which is absolutely fantastic. And he had 66 missed tackles forced in 240 attempts, which I'll do for you really quickly. Is 0.28. So that's quite good too. It's above average also, we'll say. But, you know, very, very solid player. Fair to state, and you had him lower than I did, or you had him higher than I did. So yep. If the Ravens got him at 91, you'd be thrilled, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 91, I think that would be an incredible value to me. I think, to me, I would consider him, you know, at the second round. He wouldn't be as good value there, but I could understand trying to take a swing at the second round. I mean, we already talked about Samson. I think he could also be a good fit in that position as well. I'm a little bit higher on Johnson, but I think that's definitely a play for the future.
Definitely kind of a not particularly steep grade off in quality of running backs this year, such that the Ravens could chase the running back by trying to chase value because there are so many of them, and, you know, being beat by five or six picks each time and not really finding themselves concerned about that, and ending up with a guy, you know, in round five or six. I could see that end up happening to the Ravens this year as well. But I don't think there's a huge differentiation certainly in the top 10 backs, but even in really the top 20 backs, in terms of how much less you get for a lot of those honorable mention guys.
Yeah, I think it's just a very strong class, I think. And that's why I could see the Ravens not taking a back early, even though I think there is potential value and talent to be had, because you can get someone who can be a good back in the fourth, fifth, probably sixth round, much better than what we could get last year, for instance.
Okay. All right. So Johnson, my number five guy, your number three guy, who's your number four guy?
My four is Travion Henderson of Ohio State. These two, Johnson, or I should say three, Johnson, Sampson, and Henderson, were all very similar in range. I had a slight preference to Johnson over them because I feel like he's probably a little bit more, a little bit more brought to the table in terms of the size speed combination. Henderson has the speed for sure. I mean, he's an explosive player, I think. 4.42, I think, was his time set, or 4.43. Very fast, good size, you know, 5'10", 208. One of the things that you love about him is his ability on third down. I think of all the players in this class, probably the best pass protector. Really, really sound, fundamentally sound, physical in his ability to look for and block well as a running back. I think that will translate immediately to the NFL. Also a very, very good pass catcher. Even though he may not have like numbers, he has the ability, I think, to run downfield routes more so than a lot of the running backs in this class. I mean, we've talked a lot about ADOTs. I don't know specifically what his ADOT was, but I feel like I saw him running actual routes more than a lot of these running backs. I think, you know, he has home run ability. We saw that, I think, clearly, if you watch any Ohio State football, he was someone who was a big play threat for them. The speed was evident. There's not a lot not to like about him. To me, the one thing that held me back from having him a little bit higher is the fact that he's missed time due to injury. And that's not something that you love to see. I don't think it's anything that's like massively a red flag, but it does have a little bit of a concern there. He doesn't have the biggest frame of any of the running backs we're seeing in this class. So that's a little bit of a flag, but in terms of, you know, what he can do, especially in a well-blocked scheme, I think he can be a dynamic player and also very good on third down.
I'm with you in terms of his threat as a receiver is very significant. 9.4 yards per target. It was highlighted by 75-yard screen catch and run versus Texas. It's actually the run I was thinking about. It wasn't Martinez, it was him. -6 plus 81. He had a wall of OSU blockers. It's seriously that one, no missed tackles forced or anything on the play. I don't want to say anything about my own speed at age 61, nearly 62, but I'm guessing you could have outrun the defense on that play. With knowing not very little about how fast you can run, but you know, you're a relatively young guy here. It was an unbelievably well-blocked play and looked good. Injury flags are there. Missed time in 22 and 23. You mentioned it with the foot, and then an undisclosed in 23 where he missed the Maryland game. And they never really said why. I don't think that was the only time he missed that year. The foot, the 2022 injury is a fracture torn ligament situation. I don't know if it was a Liz Frank was included in there because it seems like it would have taken him more time to get back than he did. But however you categorize that thing, being out twice like that early in a college career is not a good thing. In terms of what he's done, though, he's had 42 touchdowns and just one fumble.
If you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line up of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small farm American cannabis. So you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies. And let me tell you, takes about 15 minutes and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are Epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
4 yards per carry career at OSU. I can't negate the value of that, in particular on the fumble side, not turning the ball over, by the fact that, you know, Ohio State always had a great offensive line blocking for him. They did. His missed tackles forced are not really impressive. He is, despite the fact that he's a bigger back at 5'10", 202, or a reasonably sized back, .22 missed tackles forced is not good. And the Yakko of 389 is probably even a little bit disappointing for how many first contact opportunities he's getting in level two. So I didn't love him as much for that. I also, by the way, had him at number four. So we're in lockstep on that. I think one of the things I didn't like about him was kind of an indecisive running style. I think you see on a fair number of the plays that they're running some sort of zone play, he'll, or it really doesn't matter, zone or gap. He'll bounce and then he'll bounce again to try and get to the outside rather than cut the ball up. And that's particularly bad on zone plays though, where he's got the opportunity to cut back someplace. And, you know, you just end up running out of real estate at some point. A cutback is going to be the more appropriate thing. So I think he was sometimes good at making quick cutbacks on zone plays and had some good vision on that. But then there was also addicted to this outside bounce. The guy I tie that to as a Ravens back in the past is Willis McGahee. Mm-hmm. And it worked extremely well when he was down by the goal line. And he actually had to make cutbacks then. He had to find a hole and had to have his good vision to get that high touchdown total. But especially in his first year when he's, you know, the primary back for the Ravens in 2007, it's bounce, bounce, go all the time in terms of him. And you know, he had the speed to do it. He could get away with it. And sometimes it looks not as bad because of that, but the result is probably not optimal when you have a running back who lacks that willingness to stick his foot in the ground and take another cutback lane.
So You have him fourth overall. We talked a little bit about draft position. He's someone you would be third round.
Yes.
Kind of happy with. Okay.
Yeah. I he's not a guy I see as a value in round two at number 59. I'd love him at 91 and he'll be gone by then. So he might be gone by 59. And if so, I'd say that's probably good for whoever the Ravens end up getting at 59. If Trevion Henderson isn't it, it's probably a good thing. If he goes, you know, at number 80, then I'm going to be pissed that the Ravens have lost out on a potential, or particularly number 89 or 90, I'm going to be pissed that the Ravens lost out on a potential value selection.
So, yeah. I mean, the Ravens have a lot of kind of late round draft capital. So if they see someone sliding that they like, you know, in the third round or fourth round, they could potentially move up a few spots to kind of nab somebody.
Yeah, the problem with that is the Ravens draft capital they have in round six and seven, I think they have five picks in those two rounds, doesn't add up to a hill of beans.
Yeah.
You know, they can trade a six this year for a five next year. And hopefully there's a couple teams that are kind of desperate to get that done in the sixth round. If there are, that'd be really good value out of those. But their total draft capital is really low. And you look at the New York Giants have, you know, over 3,200 JJ points to spend on this draft. And the Ravens have about, I think it's about 1,280 or something. If they traded every single one of their picks and got one for one JJ value, they'd move up to somewhere between the 10th and 11th pick overall. So, you know, I know there's a lot of people out there that say, we've got around 11 picks, just trade some of those. Well, you trade all of them, you wouldn't get very much. I mean, you just don't have that much draft capital.
No. I think that's true. And I think, especially looking at the JJ scale, I do think that there has been a little bit more emphasis recently towards picks in general, just having like the kind of like dart throws and ability to like get somebody. I think, you know, even late round picks, I think there's a little bit more value now than there might have been 20 years ago.
I think I completely agree with you, by the way, and all of the other charts that have come out, whether it's Hill or the other ones from PFF and things, they have a flatter element to the curve. But there's two problems with it. One is I haven't seen one of them yet that does a good job of having an arithmetic subtraction for the replacement level. So yeah, your seventh level player is that much above the replacement level player, but that doesn't mean you derive some big value out of a sixth round pick, say, above the replacement level. I think that's where the Hill chart in particular, I think, tends to overvalue. And the PFF guy, he acknowledged it on air to his credit, came on my show and said, you might be right. I might not be deducting the value for the street level, but you know, this is what I can impute from the information I have here. Most of them start with AV as well, because it's really all they have for a metric. And that's kind of, it's not completely flawed or anything. It just has a different kind of a set of simplifications to it that doesn't always make sense, but there aren't a lot of better metrics. It's the truth of the matter is there just isn't, there's not any one simple way to analyze this. But when we get together on draft night, we'll notice that the first 10 to 15 picks, there can be big swings in terms of who wins from a JJ perspective. After that, when you get into trading rounds, 2, 3, 4, 5 picks, rarely are there big swings in expected from the JJ value that you should get.
Yep. I think that's right.
All right. I think we're up to number three. So we've talked about Dylan Sampson was your number three, right?
Yes.
And so
Johnson was my number three. So I think
Caleb Johnson. Okay.
Yeah. Yours, okay, we have not discussed yet.
We have not. And it's Omarion Hampton of North Carolina, who's definitely, I wouldn't say a polarizing figure in this draft, but there's just a variation. Does bring a lot to the position in terms of athleticism. Let's get to Hampton notes here. 6'1", 220, 446 speed, turned 22 in March. Vertical and broad jump, both outstanding. 4.4. The 440 shuttle was not, that's a little bit concerning, not tremendously concerning, but it's just one drawback. But generally, he's a very good, one-cut, explosive, fairly fast back that does most of the things well, holds onto the football very well, one fumble in 281 attempts in 2024. 0.26 MTF at his size is not good at all. His 4.35 yards after contact is outstanding. So, you know, you got when the two go in different directions like that, it's always nice to see the better Yakko number, because honestly, that's more important. Missed tackles forced, the goal of them is to get Yakko. So you want the higher Yakko per attempt. Lots of breakaway runs in his case. I like his vision. He runs upright. I would say one drawback I would have is that if he's, it kind of reminds me of the difference between seeing Lamar Jackson, I gave it away, and Tyler Huntley on the field for quarterback for the Ravens. Tyler Huntley's not that much slower than Lamar, but Tyler Huntley runs in a linear style and he's not trying to use the opponent's leverage against him. And I think that's a weakness of Hampton relative to other backs in this class, that he really does not read leverage particularly well. And you know, some of it is throwing leverage as well and trying to get that opponent to make a mistake. And that could be part of the missed tackle forced low number there. One cut and go runner. Otherwise, got a pretty heavy tread wear on him at 716 total touches in college. It's certainly one of the higher in this class. What else do I have to say? Caught 38 balls for 8.7 yards per target on 72 career receptions. Just had 3-2 TDs on those, but I'm not going to get too excited about that. He's one of the best running backs in this class. I don't like him any earlier than round 3 for the Ravens. And we'll see. The mesh point will add another dimension for him. He could certainly be more effective in the Ravens scheme because of leveraging who Lamar Jackson is. I would think a better runner for vision and juking is going to be the better runner for pairing with Lamar Jackson. But Hampton brings too much physically to the position for me not to have him as high, any higher than, or any lower than 3 on my list.
Yeah, I agree with pretty much everything there. My only quibble would be, so for me, he's my number 2. I think if the Ravens had him on the board in the second round, I think they would probably take him based off of kind of just the overall draft profile that he presents. I don't think he'll be there. I think he's someone who could actually sneak into the first round, the back end of the first round. That wouldn't be too surprising. Just because players of his stature just don't come along that often. And he's not even the best running back in this class. But he has a lot of, you know, we mentioned a little bit of that with Judkins earlier. I think there's a kind of similar player in a lot of ways, but I think a more rounded player, better and on passing downs for sure. You know, the size and speed is pretty similar. Maybe he's probably a little bit more explosive, I think, than Judkins is. A little bit more long speed, just a little bit more ability to kind of break a tackle and take it to the house. He's to me, like, I agree with what you just said at the end in terms of like the profile of a running back that would fit well into the Ravens scheme. And that's why I was very attracted to players like Dylan Sampson, Devin Neal, because I feel like they have a little bit more of that type of like short area elusiveness and vision and, you know, balance through contact and ability to read their blocks. I think they can be really successful in the Ravens, you know, backfield. And I think Hampton would kind of brute force his effectiveness to a certain, similar to how Derrick Henry has in a lot of ways. It's not really a finesse thing. It's more just physical ability. Speed, power, that combination, I think, can have a lot of impact. So I don't think the Ravens really have an opportunity to draft him unless they potentially trade back out of the first round and get him in the second. He might fall into that range. That's really the only scenario I could possibly envision. I don't think they'll take running back with their first pick in the draft, though.
Yeah, I'm with you there, too. I think there's too much in terms of a shallow, not steep grade off to the running back talent pool that I just wouldn't. I wouldn't draft him. And I do think with your first round pick, part of the value of that is the fifth year option and the second contract value you get out of the guy, the leveraging into that second contract that you get from drafting a guy in the first round, having the tag and the fifth year option available to you. If you use it on a running back, there's too high a probability that the guy's a one contract player. And you're going to be happy for that guy to leave at the end of one instead of wanting a second. So there are a lot of good reasons not to draft a running back in the first round, and the Ravens generally have not done it.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Jamal Lewis. That's the only time, and I think he had pretty good impact when he was taken So can't complain too much about that one.
Yeah, he also had a 5-year runway for sure in that era. So he didn't have all the build up in salary and everything. So, you know, he signed his first contract. Of course, in that era also, they didn't have the slotted system. So it might have cost, I actually don't know if it cost in terms of percentage of cap, say, whether Jamal Lewis was more or less expensive on his first contract. It'd be worth going back and looking at. Okay, so you had him at number two, Omarion Hampton, so we'll be next to him. And I had Dylan Sampson at number two. So I guess we're all the way to number one at this point.
Yeah, and I think that leaves us with Ashton Jeanty, who is probably one of the better running back prospects we've seen in recent memory. I think, you know, he's really the full package when it comes to the running back position. I don't know if you want to spend too much time on him because he's probably going to be a top 10 pick, but just a really, truly exceptional producer on the field, incredibly consistent. He does everything you want for him. His ability to break tackles is just an insane thing that you, and part of that is probably due to the competition, but it's his metrics in that area are just kind of like otherworldly. The missed tackle rate, the yards after contact, the long runs, the whole combination of it. It's just really just a truly like, it's an impressive story that he has. And I think that he is going to be drafted very highly, and I think for good cause. The Ravens won't have a chance to look at him, but I think some team is probably going to get a very good back when they do draft him. And it's just a matter of where he goes and the impact he might have, but it'll be interesting to see how early he does go in this kind of era of running back value.
Yeah, so we may be, you know, with the big years that Saquon and Derrick Henry had this last year, we may be entering a new era where you got a higher valuation on running backs. You might draft them in the first round again. The other guy who had a big year and like nobody's talking about is Bijan Robinson. He had the highest success rate ever, the first 60% success rate ever for a guy with 270 plus carries, and he cleared the hurdle by a good amount. Is that like 310 carries or something like that? And he's right up there with Henry and Saquon. And his season went unnoticed to a sense with the incredible yardage seasons that both the other two were having. I, you know, as much as he is the clear number one back in this draft, I have some serious concerns about him. I'll go through this quick. I mean, first of all, he's 5'8 and a half, 211. Not a terrible size for a running back. He's small, but at 211, he's very thickly built. And in fact, when I look at him, I know he draws all kinds of comparisons to Barry Sanders and Saquon Barkley as being this shifty, you can't even get to him kind of back. To me, he looks more like Derrick Henry, just a smaller version of Derrick Henry. He's extraordinarily thickly built guns, thickly built in the hips. And you have to be to carry that much weight on a 5'8 and a half frame. Ran 4.42 at his pro day. I'm a little bit concerned about that we didn't get a combine measurement on him. Turned 21 in December, so he's young. His physical development relative to that youth is a very big plus for him. Missed tackles force, you mentioned it, 0.41 per play. The Yakko per attempt, 5.25, by far the best in the class. Pops off the page. I will just say he's got a whole bag of tricks to make people miss tackles. He's got a spin, a stiff arm. He's got good contact balance. All of that is there. Outstanding one cut ability, speed to get to the edge. He's the complete package with regard to that. I will just say context is a major issue playing at Boise State. So you really have to look at that and say, but yeah, what happened? He's a rare back who I think is plus in the three most important running back categories for me, which are power, elusiveness, and speed. He's a plus in all three categories. And a lot of players are a plus in two categories. Jamal Lewis was a plus speed back who also was a plus power back, but he wasn't a plus of elusiveness back. You know, if you look at Derrick Henry, he's certainly got plus power, probably still even has plus speed, but he's not a plus elusiveness back anymore. There are very few running backs in the entire game or who really even played the game in recent years that you can say are truly plus in all three categories. There's plenty of tape on him for both gap and zone runs, among 375 carries. Anybody concerned about that? Because you should be. It's a lot of tread wear. Lots of good L2 opportunities from the Boise State offensive line. First contact with inside linebackers, safeties, and corners is obviously going to be more valuable, and he got some of that. He doesn't have any sort of length to pass blocks. His arms are 29 and a quarter inches. That'll reduce his NFL role. And what he could bring you as a receiver, which wasn't much in 2024, he had 4.2 yards per target as a receiver. I can come up with reasons why I think that might be true. I think he's always kind of marked by a linebacker, almost like having a spy on the quarterback. If you're playing Boise State, you spy Ashton Jonte, effectively. And I think they always had somebody out, you know, making damn sure he was covered on vertically. And that probably reduced what he could do. He has not yet learned how to find space after chipping. And that is a difficult thing to learn. Mentioned the problem with Justice Hill's had with it. If an NFL team can just figure out how to leave him out in the open, it's probably a big extension of the run game. I bet they'd get a lot more than 4.2 yards per target. If you came to the Ravens, I mean, he'd do much better than 4.2 yards per target in this offense. You know, with all the weapons they can space out off the field. You're not going to have a spy on Ashton if you're going to leave Lamar alone, you know, to do that. So it is just not as many different options that a team has that they'd be able to deal with Ashton the same way he was dealt with in college. But I do think the game planned against him in college, and he'll be a fine athlete, a fine back at the next level. What else do I have to say about him? 10 fumbles in the last 3 years. That's a problem. He has had a lot of carries in that period of time. And he's going to be gone long before the Ravens draft at 27. He probably will go in the top 10, or at least he might go in the top 10. And honestly, he's another player that I'm going to say, phew. If the Ravens are on the clock at 27, and he's one of the players they could draft, and they have, you know, needed edge and need a cornerback, and they've got other good players that they could take, that's a much more sweaty proposition for me than having some other team take him and having to deal with the large variance of potential outcome in his career that could accrue.
Yeah, I mean, it would be, I don't think that's a scenario that would happen. I don't think I would hate the idea of drafting Jonte at 27. Like, I know it's hard to swallow not taking a more high value position, but I do feel like he's a unique prospect in terms of what he brings to the table. I think like he would really inject similar kind of ability as what Derrick Henry brought, I think.
Yeah.
And he would do that at the age of 21. You know, the Ravens would have him for 5 years on a very reasonable contract. I mean, I don't think that's a scenario that would ever happen unless some crazy thing happens on draft night. So I can't imagine, you know, that being something to really be concerned about. But I think, you know, at that part of the draft, that there's value there.
Here's the question I'd have for you. Let's say they're on the clock at 21 or 27, sorry. And the last of the big four offensive tackles is out there. And I'm not even including one of them, but I'm basically saying it's Campbell, Connerly, Banks. And who's the fourth? I'm forgetting right now. Campbell, Connerly, Banks, and give me just a second here. I'll get to my top 10 that I have it for. And Membu.
Yeah, Membu.
So let's say those four guys are you have one of them remaining on the board. Might be Membu. Might be perfectly reasonable that he'd be a guy that's left at that point. Certainly is reasonable that Connerly might be. And you have a choice between him and Austin Jonte. I don't think there's any question about which player would have the greater immediate impact on your football team. But I think there's a big question about which player is the better franchise cornerstone to lay down than one of those offensive tackles or Ashton. And that's where my problem comes. I mean, just, you know, do you want a 4 year back or a 5 year back, or do you want a 8 year player?
I completely understand that, but I also think the quality of tackle you're drafting at that is not necessarily a home run, you know,
right.
If maybe Membu, I would probably make the argument for, because I think he has the potential to be a high end tackle. I'm not sure the other players. I don't think Will Campbell will be there. But even if Will Campbell was, okay. So Campbell or Membu, I would say, take those potentially over Jonte. But for the other guys, in my opinion, they're less of a definitive, like, you're going to get like a full-time starter at left tackle from them. And I think you have, you have more of a, like a quantifiable value with Jean T. I think you know what you're getting there.
In both cases, they're kind of playing behind some older players on their initial contract. I think that actually potentially takes away more value from a player like Jean T, who might be a one contract or 5 year player for you.
It's true
that you let walk. And so you can lose. Okay. Let's say he loses a season and a half. You can lose 30% of the value of that player for having to play behind Derrick Henry. And it's not like he would get no touches. He'd get a decent amount of touches, but and he'd be a part of the offense. If anybody get injured, he'd be a huge part of the offense, but I don't know that the Ravens get real value out of him. In the same case at offensive tackle, I'm much less concerned about that. First of all, there's injuries that will occur and probably give Membu a chance to get in there. But if he doesn't, and it's a developmental year, I still say, okay, no problem. Got him for 4 years. They're going to be four higher quality years. And you know, you avoid some of the problems that first year offensive linemen have of not being good, other than the very top players. And running backs, very, very frequently, their rookie season is going to be one of their highest rate productivity years.
That's reasonable. And I also think if you draft a tackle, you can potentially plug them in a guard and fix that.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, so it's an interesting question. Most likely just a hypothetical, but interesting to think about.
Yeah. Gabe, I love talking football with you. This has been so fun to spend a couple hours here talking about the running back group. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Gabe Fergie, on Blue Sky, also the same handle. And it's probably the best place to get in touch if you want to chat about football, baseball. You know, Orioles fan here, so I'd love to talk about the upcoming season as we get going. So, yeah, I'd love to talk to people online.
All right. I appreciate you folks for listening. Gabe, appreciate you coming on. Other folks out there, a couple of things. First of all, we're getting excited about the Orioles season. I will say this. If anybody needs Orioles tickets for individual games, hit me up. I've got some beautiful season tickets I'll sell you at cost in terms of where they're going. I'm not going to go to all the games personally, but they're in section 43 and they're really, really wonderful seats. And if you need tickets for a different game, I'd be happy to get those for you. I can get them for you at a cheaper price via my season ticket thing. So please hit me up. Just DM me if you're interested in that. I'm not interested in opening this to the whole world. And I do have a few opening day tickets too, if you're interested in those that I bought in the pre-sale for players. So if you're still listening at this point, you're probably a big fan of the show and might want to take some of those off my hands. Gabe, appreciate you coming on.
Ken, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.